Welcome back, everyone. My name is Kaz.
This is Medi Bob.
This is episode X of the Skulls Cast, where the numbering got kind of off the rails for me, and I didn't bother to look it up before hitting the record button. So this is a number of an episode.
No, this is specifically episode X.
Oh, you're right. Yes. Now it is episode X.
There you go. As to where that fits in the sequencing, that's up to you to keep track of.
Right. I mean, we would have to come up with an estimator for where it properly goes in the sequence.
And I think that moves.
There's like a probabilistic readout of where this actually belongs.
Yeah, this is a non-deterministic episode. Mm.
And what we're not determining today is everything to do about competitive games. The reason I wanted to talk about this is it came up recently in just casual conversation with a friend of mine, where like the notion of like the game as it is and the notion of the game as something to be competed using, like a tool for competition, vastly changed what the game actually is. So there's a difference between like Pac-Man and competitive Pac-Man, right? In that scenario, you're like, okay, I'm playing Pac-Man because it's fun. And then the other scenario, it's I'm playing Pac-Man because I want to beat the high score.
Yes.
Right? So that does fundamentally change a game, no matter what it is. And there are some games that just can't exist without a competitive aspect. Checkers, for instance. There's you on one end of the table and your partner on the other end of the table, and you're both trying to win using the same rule set. So that's like...
Right, your direct head-to-head
right.
games.
Right, so you do have head-to-heads, you have score attack. There's probably some combination of the two. I guess primarily I wanted to focus on games like the kind you would see at Evo.
Okay, so head-to-head games.
Right, head-to-head games, not necessarily like fighting games, you know. Because, no. I mean, for one, we've seen like Catherine at Evo, and that's not a fighting game in the traditional sense, because it's like shove and block and edge and all
this
that.
It is a shove and block.
And there's bells and sheep. And
you have to push the shoving blocks.
You push the shoving block. Do not die. I don't think we've seen anything quite like a score attack at an Evo. But there is a kind of, you know, if we're not talking about fighting games, we could be talking about speed running. And that has a kind of general competition to it of, hey, here's my high score or fastest time for my personal best for completion for this category, what's yours, and so on. And they have leaderboards for all that, and that's a kind of competition too. And I can assure you that the game of Mario 64 that
is brutal,
right?
Absolutely savage.
Mario 64 is a fun game to play on your own, and you know, jump around, and Mario makes noises and climbs trees and looks at the camera, and that's fun. And it's a much different game that we're talking about if we're talking about like competitive speed based Mario 64 for a stars category. And I didn't take any like notes on this, and I'm sure that this could be formed into a more coherent thought.
Like, I guess the first thing that comes to mind as sort of an important distinction between the head-to-head game as competition, where like you play an instance of it and that instance resolves with a winner and a loser, versus the speedrunning type of competing where it's sort of everyone going on their own and comparing results, is that in the head-to-head game, the aspect of competition is designed into the game, whereas often in the speedrun game, it is not. I'm not going to say never designed into the game, because there are games that more recently do specifically feature what the games themselves call speedrun mode, that attempt to denote what they consider to be, you know, he was, if you want to speedrun this game, we highly recommend choosing this option from the menu. But even with that, the decisions of categories is something that is external to the game software itself. It's this community-imposed rule set.
And community is exactly it. Because for some games, there is a governing rules body, right? I know I'm not supposed to talk about Magic the Gathering, but Magic has a DCI, you know, a governing body.
Look at me,
body.
I'm the DCI.
Right.
Jace is banned.
Right, and like banned lists and restricted lists and, you know, stuff to keep the competitive version of the game on a level playing field or somehow enforce it. Now, for video games, that's controlled more in like patches or whatever. Like the video game, like you boot up the software allows you to like design a character, distribute attribute points or make a deck or whatever based on rules that they've cooked into the software itself, so they no longer need to like socially impose a rule set. And I'm going to bother calling like even an official governing body a social convention, because it does ultimately come down to you dealing with other people, even if some of those people are judges and have an authority.
Right. And even in and sentences. Like any given coordinator of a tournament, of course, is free to specify additional socially enforced rules for that tournament, you know, that may or may not be a common practice for players of that game, but they can say, you know, if you want to compete in this specific event, there are these additional rules.
Mm-hmm. So that brings about the notion of, and I know we commonly use this word to mean something else, but it applies, the metagame. That is to say, the game that you play by navigating the social environment of the competitive sphere of this other game. So, for instance, speedrun competition for Super Metroid, say. The game itself has rules cooked into it. You know, you plug it into the Super Nintendo, you have a controller on the other end, and you go. Where, if you want to participate in a competition, there are other rules, not as definite or explicit, that you must abide by in order to really compete. You can't just, like, you know, show up to a race that's an in-person race and, like, slap the controller out of someone else's hands. People will very quickly stop letting you attend events if you behave this way.
Well, they'll put you in the sand in Meridia, and there you will stay.
Right? Oh, man. If only there were, like, mandatory punishment holes akin to... Oh, my God. Okay, so you... I don't know if you've played Mighty Bomb Jack.
I have.
Okay, you know those rooms where you get into them and you have to like jump 50 times before the door appears? They're just like,
yes.
They're just like punishment rooms?
Yes, punishment rooms.
So I almost wish that there were a version of the Super Metroid race where if you did a foul of some kind, which never happens, but you know, if it were a thing, you fouled and then as part of your run through the game, you are required to, like, go to extra rooms. Like, you have to go this way. This is your new route.
Although this gives me thoughts for maybe not for Super Metroid, although it could be for Super Metroid, of just sort of, again, sort of tacking your own rules onto the game, where it's like you must do X, and if you fail to do X, you're not disqualified, but you then must do Y.
Mm.
In order to not be disqualified.
I think it would be best if either, like, being able to do that yourself was very straightforward, or there were, like, a part of that cooked into the game itself, akin to, like a timer, say, and after such and such a time, one door just closes off and you have to take a different one. I hate to say it, but more something like in Final Fantasy IX, for instance, where if you like get through to this one treasure chest within 12 hours or something. It opens and you get the thing, and if you don't, then it's just locked forever or not even there. I don't remember exactly how that works, but I know that Excalibur 2, isn't that the treasure?
It's the save the caliber or the no, but you know, games feature that have, you know, even the smallest of branching paths may have mechanisms that open or close those paths.
Right. So like optimally you would be able to get through like rooms A, B, and C faster if you kill this one specific gamer, but killing that guy makes room C lead to room F instead of to room D. You murdered him. He's not there to help you. So you have to take a longer path. You know,
that was Ridley's favorite gamer. So Ridley is in rage mode for this fight.
Oh my god. I guess there is stuff like that.
Like Ridley but bad.
No. There's, I guess, a very small instance of that is where you you shoot Fantoon with a super, right?
Yeah.
Like it does bonus damage, but he punishes you for it, and so it's to your advantage to make that the last hit. But if you haven't been counting carefully, then it's not the last hit, and you can't damage him for like 36 seconds or whatever it is.
And in terms of navigating the game space, that is the fight against Fantoon. That's a sort of branching path.
Mm-hmm.
You make the choice to use the super or not use the super, and this leads to different outcomes. So even things as small as that are decision points.
So that's really neat. It's neat to think about. But the reason that I wanted to talk about this topic at all was because you're playing a social game now. You know, you're playing the social game of interacting with other people within the competitive space. It's important to understand and abide by the social rules of the game. For instance, if you show up to play Smash Brothers with, you know, guys, whatever, you know, you show up to play Smash Brothers with, like, friends, you will probably play differently than if you go to, like, Smash Brothers Melee tournament, whatever. You know, you'll play in different stages, you'll have different items enabled, or your friends will get pissed off at you because you're being a tier dasher.
Tier dashing.
And then...
Because you got... The mental dichotomy that I usually work with, and it's really more of a continuum than a dichotomy, as most dichotomies are, is the, you know, on one end you've got the fun haver, and on the other hand, and you have the try hard. Are you here to have fun, or are you here to try hard? And oftentimes in a game, the goals of these two players will directly attempt to destroy each other.
Yeah. Like the importance of... Oh, no. That's not the way to begin that sentence. And I've lost it. I've just lost my mind. Walked right out of my head.
Fabulous. So you know, you're playing Smash Bros. And you're just with your crew... And you're like, all right, mateys, let us smash upon these bros. And it's like, whatever. There's a different thing at stake in the whole process. Versus you go to the convention and you pay your entry fee to get your name on the list to be in the tournament. And, you know, there's something else at stake here. The stakes are different.
Where it gets a little degenerate is either if one or more persons fail at the social game, like the metagame, or if the community itself devolves somehow. The former happens typically around the, you know, the kitchen table, whatever, random meetup, magic playing crowd. It happens everywhere I've been to. There's someone who plays a competitive deck at the casual table. And it's like, it's so difficult to, like, agree upon non-tournament rules you know, unless you're playing with the same people a lot and you, you know, hang out with them outside of the game, it's almost impossible to like have and enforce a consistent rule set. And if like, if you and your opponent have a different notion of what like fair means or what the purpose of this game is, you know, the game that you're about to play, you've essentially already failed at the metagame. You have lost, both of you.
Both players lose.
You all lose because you're not operating under the shared rule set. And it's difficult to do that with people, and you have to be like open and socially aware. And it's not like, I'm not saying that, okay, if you get grumped by some try hard, you're also failing. I'm saying like that's it's not on you. It's just it's happened. So
because in a head-to-head game where there are rules for determining a winner and a loser, so it's a competitive game, the game kind of breaks down if one player is not actually trying to win the game.
Right, this would happen to me a lot. I would frequently remind everyone that I was playing around the card table with, I'm like, well, I am trying to beat you by reducing your life total to zero. So
why are you attacking me? I haven't done anything yet.
Yeah, well,
I haven't even developed my board.
You're my opponent. That makes it easier.
I must. So I, in order to win, I must destroy you.
Mm-hmm. And so even if you, and also if you win the game, like the card game, you may have still lost the metagame, right? Because, you know, if someone is less inclined to play with you afterward, then you're cutting yourself off from a future avenue of interaction, which might be correct. That might be what you want. It's like, I don't want to play this person again, so that's great. So I've won, actually. Or, you know, but it's absolutely something to be aware of. The rules of the game itself are not exhaustive to what is possible within the metagame.
The catch is that, like, you have to both be trying to win in order for the game to really function. At least when you're playing with a stranger with whom you have not explicitly negotiated, you know, terms ahead of time.
Right.
So when you go to play with a stranger, the only realistic, safe assumption is that they are out for blood and you should be too.
Yeah, like use the rules of the game itself as a starting point.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like absent of any social information, that's all you have to go on.
Like pretty casual fighting game meetups, you know, with strangers, but there was no tournament being played. It's just, you know, if you lose, you go to the back of the line. That those are the stakes. Mm-hmm. There, no one is softballing, no one at all. It would subvert the purpose of the entire affair if someone was not genuinely attempting to play to the best of their ability.
I think a little subversion is fine.
If
you choose to like clown on someone or do something stylish instead of like correct
roundhouse four times in a row, you're not going to block. You're not going to block. But see, that's even the real game though. That's the real game of a fighting game. Is if I'm in your head and I'm like, you're not going to block, then I should do this, you know, idiot move, because it will work and it will defeat you.
Yep, you have the lined up dragon warrior judges on the side, and you know they're all like, no, that's fair. It's up to him to stop you from doing that. Oh goodness.
But you know, again, there's an understanding here that, you know, we're all here. There's no money on the line, but we're all trying to play hard and get better.
Right.
So everyone is taking every match reasonably seriously.
So that's one way, one of the ways in which these situations break down is in, if not all players who are participating have an agreed upon mindset for what the social rules of the game are. The other place it breaks down is if there already is an established community with a firm set of rules that has either sort of run away with the game or is not friendly to newcomers. And I'm going to lean on the Smash Brothers community for this one. I'm going to start by stating a rather curious fact. It's always struck me anytime I'm watching Evo, say. Smash Brothers, for whatever reason, the tournament scene is still Melee. Is that right?
Have they moved on to Brawl? Melee still has a very active tournament scene. Smash 4 also has a very active tournament scene.
Okay.
Pretty much no one plays Brawl anymore.
Okay, no one plays... Well, okay, that's fine. Are you sure it's Smash 4? I didn't really see that. I guess I just missed that part. Maybe that's okay. But I would, like, that seems really unique among the fight game players, and I'm casting a really wide net here to include them all. Like, apart from that, the community tends to gravitate to whatever, like, the newest version, newest edition, whatever of the fight game is. Unless that's incorrect. Like, do people...
I mean, at Evo...
Is there just a strong retro community for any given fighting game from any year?
For certain ones, I would not... I don't follow any of the communities for the games I'm naming too closely. I wouldn't be surprised if there's still people doing Street Fighter 3 Third Strike tournaments.
Hmm.
Third Strike was a massive game. You know, older versions of Guilty Gear might still get played. King of Fighters, there are specific games in the King of Fighters series that are viewed very favorably.
Hmm.
And so they might still get a scene. The thing is, with the big events like Evo, you often have the game publisher involved.
Okay, so do you think that like Capcom and so on are sort of
Capcom
like...
Capcom really wants you to be playing Street Fighter V right now. That's really the game they'd like for you to play.
Right, something that they're still making money off of right. sales on. So, okay, they have a stake
and
in
supporting
that.
And so they run their own events, and they strongly incentivize and provide more support for people who want to play Street Fighter V than for any other Street Fighter game.
All right, maybe it's a little unfair of me then to specifically call out Smash Brothers Melee players for this. It just seemed like, I guess... That was my greater experience with that, and it just looked weird from where I was sitting.
Smash Melee is definitely unique in that, like you said, at Evo, Melee being, you know, sort of a previous version of a game still got such high billing, and it was sort of on there along with the newest version of the game.
Hmm.
Whereas, you know, as soon as we have Street Fighter V on there, I don't know if Street Fighter 4 is still even going to be a main stage event. Was Street Fighter 5 at the last Evo?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I forgot when it came out, because they keep adding new stuff, and so right. I'm like, is this game actually out yet, or is it still in beta?
Right, I'm okay.
Oh, don't add Urien, right?
No, I'm trying to remember
Nash.
Some like right. It was the Nash v Nash.
Nash is pretty intense.
The R Mika, the Nash v Nash.
Oh, yeah. Rainbow Mika is going to hit you very hard.
Like, bring your tag partner.
Just calling her wife to also
clearly.
Hit you.
All right, but so, yeah, I'm going to drop the allusion to Smash Melee for this. But it does happen that, like, the community takes on the game, makes it their own, and then sort of like wards off all comers who would say, no, it shouldn't be this, no, we should operate it under different rules. And like, I watch them play, and I'm like, how do you come up with this? Why is this the agreed upon standard? Look at Hearthstone competitive matches. In like every Hearthstone tournament I've seen, each player brings like four deck, or it's either four or five decks, and sometimes each player knows every other player's, all their other decks, their full lists. Sometimes they don't. And they always have one that the other player bans. So, like, you bring four decks, and I say, you can't use that one. And I bring four decks, and you say, I can't use this one. And then we play. And I'm like, where does this come from? That's not in the game itself. How did they come up with this stuff? Why is that part of it? Is this published anywhere? Is there a governing rules body? Like, what am I watching? Blizzard,
I mean, Blizzard does host big deal Hearthstone events. Do they set
they
these
do.
Rules?
I don't
but
think
like,
so.
The question of where did it come from is still a valid one. Because this, you know, this whole like banning and picking and stuff, it's reminiscent of the nightmare that is your dote games, where there are 100 characters and it's like you take turns picking and also banning characters.
the like, draft and anti-draft,
right?
Oh my god, what if competitive, like professional sports did that? Like, okay, Oakland Athletics, I'm going to draft this guy, and you are forbidden from drafting this other guy.
Other teams can draft him. You cannot.
This one is not an A. That would be hilarious.
It's kind of goofy. I mean, you can wave your hands and say something, something, diversify metagame, and never ever have to prove anything.
Yeah, that's kind of the rough
what
part.
I would want to see is, like, to prove that this rule is useful, you need to run tournaments without it and show how they suck in comparison.
Mm.
That's the kind of proof
right.
that I can accept.
I don't know who could do that kind of rigor, you know? Like, even
no one can. So
even if we're talking
just
about
believe
right.
in it.
That's really what distresses me about the whole situation. The part where the community just sort of comes to this consensus about things, and then no one ever proves that it's right, but everyone believes that it's right.
You know, you've got, you know, 4-ban-1, 5-ban-2,
and we have
5-ban-1.
We end up with the
3-ban-1. These are all formats.
5-ban-4.
Like the and that like it used to be that like you had to beat all three of your opponent's decks, so once they lost with one, they couldn't use it anymore, and then they changed that to once you win with one, you can't use it anymore, so you have to win with each of your three decks. But it's still always double-blind deck selection.
An independent review board whose identity will remain a secret to you and us has decided that you will use this deck.
Right, and it's like, I guess part of it might be trying to, because Magic has this weird concept of a sideboard, which is like, you have to explicitly declare your pocket before you start playing. You're like, this is the deck that I'm playing, but also these cards might appear in games 2 or 3. And like Hearthstone doesn't have that. You just have your list.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gets wacky because you.
Yeah, I guess
there are
like
things that are kind of hard counters to other things. And if you just run into it, you just get melted.
So if we think of, instead of thinking of the deck as your deck, if we think of the, like, your 4 or 5 decks as your total deck. You know?
Right. It's
like that's
the,
your total list
deck,
plus sideboard.
The version of it for this matchup, the version of it for that matchup. And they have to share X cards between all of them.
Right. I wonder why every Hearthstone tournament I've seen, every player has had like different heroes, right? So your 5 decks each have to be a different character.
Yes.
Hero.
You can't double up on a hero.
I wonder why that is. Why can't I build like 2 different Hunter decks? What if they didn't share any cards? What if
I don't know, it could be an acknowledgement that at any given time one hero is way too good and that they're like you should just play 3 different decks, or maybe 3 of the same deck.
Oh right. I'll bring 3 of the same deck. Okay,
right.
I ban
like
one. All right, I'll use the other 2.
If this deck basically has a positive or neutral matchup against the rest of the field, I should just use it all the time.
What this all says to me is that specifically Hearthstone, the competitive scene, such as it is a little unformed, a little fresh, still goofy. Working out the bugs.
Goofy is my word for really, it.
Yeah, it's kind of goofball.
I mean, I made up the rules for competitive Yoko.
Well,
they didn't come just out
we
of
do,
an oven. I wrote them down.
Right, we do have an independent review board.
Yeah, it's me. It's whoever else.
And we don't know who they are.
Yeah, I don't know who it is. Could be anyone. I say writing the rules down.
Double blind, independent. I covered both of my eyes while writing down these rules, so it is double blind.
I can write down any rules I want, but I can't look at the paper while I'm doing so. Also, I have to throw the pen out afterwards. That's fair. That's impartial.
It is.
Right, and that's part of it, is that like when communities form like this and it's just like the community determining rules, it's sort of whoever's loud enough in the community gets to shape how the game is played. And whatever they like can become law.
Right. That's really frustrating. That's what we want to avoid if at all possible. I mean, I'm not saying that the DCI is perfect and flawless, but it is nice to have judges and to have like not only rules for the game itself, but also rules for organized play and rules for becoming knowledgeable about organized play. A little bit of that could branch out into other games, I think.
But it's still this social thing. Even if I'm, you know, if there's a new game, then, you know, I'd want to organize a tournament, and really I can choose whatever rules for this tournament that I think are best, because I'm the TO.
Mm-hmm.
It is my right. If you don't like it, don't join my tournament. And while the game is fresh, and when there's no governing body coming from the people who make the game, then really it's just over time, you know, I run with my rules, some other TO runs with their rules, and whichever one of us runs more popular tournaments is going to be the one that comes to be seen as the official rules, because once one set of tournament rules are big enough, players start to expect that rule set, and then someone who wants to, some new TO, needs to either copy that or risk large amounts of players saying you're running your tournament wrong.
Mm.
And just not entering because it is different as a rule set, rather than because they have demonstrable problems or perceived problems with the rule set.
I'm surprised more companies don't try to do that. Like, For instance, Capcom benefits from taking an active hand in helping along organized play. It helps to promote their newest product. They get sales. It probably has a positive return on investment. I believe it's possible that it could, at the very least.
Well, I mean, since Capcom is within the Street Fighter community, you know, if Capcom is running a tournament, it's probably going to be a pretty big deal. And Capcom has their rules that they like. And so players will tend to prefer other tournaments that have the same rules, because that will better prepare them for Capcom's tournaments.
Mm. Another aspect of this that I would, I guess, caution those who are fond of esports or who wish to see esports become a bigger thing in the wider world and be more accepted as, you know, sport. What I caution against is letting your community run rampant or coming up with really weird crap as conventions. For instance, at the start of a game of football, they sometimes flip a coin, right? And, you know, the ref makes a big deal of, like, saying, this is the heads, this is the tails, I'm going to flip. The side calls, they get to, like, receive or kick or whatever to start off, right? Like, there's no there's no way within the game of football to determine who goes first, as it right. is. So they have to come up with something outside of the game of football that is somehow fair.
Right. It is now part of the game of competitive football.
And the thing that I want to draw as my word of caution for this is the game of Team Counter-Strike. Do you know how they determine who like takes what side first?
No, I don't. I don't follow right. Counter-Strike too
okay.
closely.
I don't know if this still goes on, but at least it used to, where in order to decide, like in order to do their coin flip, they would have a match of knives only, and whichever team was left standing after the knives only match got to choose, and they decided that this was essentially random.
Wait.
And so in between,
hold up,
at the start of a round, there's just this pile of characters in the video game butting heads with each other and swinging knives, and you're like, what is happening? If you're not already part of the community, if you don't follow the scene, it looks crazy. It's like madness. If you don't follow the game of football, you at least know what a coin toss looks like. Right? Like,
but the experts of the game say that this is a fair randomization.
This is a better and fairer version of randomness than just tossing a coin.
Than a 50,
because this
50
is
coin.
This is randomly skill based.
Ah, random skill based. So we play a full game of Mario Party, is what you're saying.
Oh, God.
To determine who goes first.
We play a full game of Monopoly to determine who.
Monopoly risk. Now you're in it. Yeah, I mean, having a bunch of extra wacky rules that are not already baked into the game can be confusing and off-putting, especially when the explanation is that a giant knife fight is random and fair for determining, like, you play this entirely separate game. I mean, I guess a coin flip call is, in a very strict meaning, a game.
Yeah.
You're playing this much a game that's a little bit more complicated than flipping a coin in order to determine some rule decision for the actual game that you're playing.
Right. Hell, even in chess, I remember one thing that we would do instead of a coin toss was like black pawn, white pawn, and you would like shuffle the two around and then present your hands, and your opponent would tap a hand and reveal, and that was your color, right?
Yeah.
I remember that.
It's goofy. I mean, you can invent as many rules as you want. You know, in certain Smash rule sets, it's like if you grab the ledge too many times in 1 minute, you're disqualified.
You're kidding.
Not kidding. Because it led to sufficiently degenerate play that they're like, we have to ban this. We have to ban people who just hang out on the ledge the whole match, because then the game sucks.
Well, I guess I can abide that rule if it leads to the game being better.
Yeah.
Right?
The thing is that because they can't just say don't do it too much, because then how are you ever going to DQ someone for it and have it seem even vaguely fair? You have to say, if within the course of 1 minute your character grabs the ledge 40 or more times, you can be disqualified for excessive ledge grabbing. Excessive ledge grabbing.
Now I need a bumper sticker that says, I was banned for obsessive ledge grabbing. Excessive ledge grabbing.
there are things, they're like, some tournaments banned certain infinites, right? You can't do this infinite. If you do it and we catch you doing it, or if you do it too much, if you do this infinite too much, you get in trouble.
Ugh.
And things like that. When the community has to start doing these little Especially in a video
essentially
game.
Right. They're essentially bug fixing a game that is no longer under development or being actively patched.
Right. There's no way to enforce this within the software, so we all just have to watch you closely and say, you did the bad thing. You did the bad thing. You can't do that.
Man,
I mean, strictly speaking, that's even in like Street Fighter, right? If you pause, that's a loss.
It's true. You can't hit the pause button.
You're not allowed to pause in the tournament match.
I didn't even think of that.
Right? If you do that, they're like, oh, you paused. You did it. Or you hit the home button.
Right. There's a surrender button.
Right. That's, you will invariably see someone hit by accident and be upset that they hit it by accident.
Man, I want to see that in a high level match.
I mean, I've seen it happen.
Oh, and it's, man, I
everyone's
watch
just
that.
Sort of really disappointed. And in a tournament, well, actually, I think strictly speaking, it's not an automatic loss, but your opponent can claim a win. They can say, let's play it out. But they can also say, you paused the game, I win this round.
Yeah, geez, the conventions with these things.
Which is kind of this terrible dilemma to be in, where it's like, I either willingly give up, by the rules, something that I have earned, Or risk being judged for it by certain people. But at the same time, like the commentators always say, whenever the person takes the win, you're like, you know what? You can do that. That's allowed. That's in the rules. Hmm. And they're specifically trying to not judge this guy for taking a win because his opponent paused in some like zero pressure situation where it didn't mess anything up real way.
Both players like neutral screen distance or whatever.
Yeah. And then if the player says, nah, let's play it out, it was like, oh, there was such a nice guy not taking the win.
The metagame is a social game. Yeah. No matter what you do. You know, if you're competing, you're competing against other players. You know?
So it's sort of this awkward spot because you as the other player have the choice. If the rule simply said they lose, then it's like, well, I mean, they hit the pause button, the judge says they lose. I don't say anything.
What can I do?
Yeah, you know.
It's neat. Competitive games.
Competitive games.
What do we want out of competitive games? I think that
more tension. The best time to win a game is immediately before your opponent does.
Go to one.
Right. No, this is a rule in Mornington Crescent. And I think as a principle of competitive games, people will be excited about playing and watching your game if you win right before your opponent does, or if your opponent beats you right as you were about to win.
Mm.
Right? Because then that means it's tense. That means there's, you don't know who's actually going to win.
Oh, I remember the other... Okay, so one thing I definitely wanted to state before we were done with this topic is that if you create a video game, one of the ways to balance it is to give, like, opposite working players the same capabilities and then, like, let them go at it. Now, your task is not finished at this point. There's still a matter of, like, making sure there's a decent variety of stuff for each player to do.
Yeah.
But it is like you're taking on a different balanced challenge when you have a competitive game, and I honestly think an easier one overall, where sure, not everybody's gonna like care in the same way about the balance of your single player non-competitive game, but if there is like one button or one move that's the degenerate like, this is the way to victory, everything else
why would
be
I ever
ignored.
Stop hitting this button?
Right. You've essentially made 10% of the game that you thought, if you have 10 different moves and only one of them is ever what the player needs.
Yeah.
So yeah.
This comes up a lot in in your indie dice rolling games, where we hand you a choice of a million different items, and basically your goal is to find the ones, is to play until the die roller gives you the ones that you know are just better than the others. Some indie dice rolling games are better about this than others. But yeah,
so yeah, we want balance. We want tension. Yeah, I honestly think that there's a kind of fun specific to competitive games. Like, you don't experience fun in the same way when you're playing on your own as when you're doing it either like with or against an opponent, and using the same rules, and you triumph. You know, there's that moment of triumph is what keeps people competing, I think.
Beautiful defeats and ugly victories. That's what people want.
That's what we really want.
You want.
But yeah, if you have a system that is not the game itself imbalanced, or if you have a social system that is imbalanced, or if there's not sufficient tension, or if the moment of triumph is not itself like a special feeling thing, your competitive game is not going to be very good. It will not succeed.
It has to feel good to win.
Mm-hmm.
This applies to
it has to feel fair. Both your players and the audience have to like believe in the fairness of your system, you know. Social aspects, belief. All this stuff
belief is vital.
This speaks to just a huge topic of the whole of human history, so I'm not gonna, by no means are we gonna exhaustively cover what it means to like compete for things. But I don't know where the end of that sentence was going. This is like the second time that my mind has just sort of walked off.
Because competitions, right? If people don't think they're fair, then it's already over.
Mm-hmm.
People have to, like, before the game even starts, believe that what is about to take place is a fundamentally fair game. Or they won't care at all. They still might not care if they believe one side to be much more powerful than the other,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the outcome is known in advance, because then there's no tension.
I think we could have like a follow-up to this at some point after I do a little more thinking and maybe write some things down about the pitfalls that competitive-minded players fall into. Because it happens across a broad array of competitive things. By the way, we call it like the pitfalls of competitive thinking. Heck, maybe that's better suited to like a lengthy blog post or something.
Yeah, you want to mash that one out.
Yeah,
I'm
not gonna be able to exposit on that one. Don't think it's very interesting.
Competitive games. Some games are fun to compete at with the rules, you know, just sort of as designed. Some games are interesting to compete at once you add one or two more rules on top. Some games are never interesting to compete at, and this doesn't make them bad games. They're just not good for competing at.
Mm.
Some games, you add a million rules, and people are convinced that they're good for competing at, but nope, they're still trash. I believe in the real esports. And I get to decide what those are because I support esports. I can detect true and false esports at 200 paces.
Wait, is that with like analyze Dwymer or detect
sense of smell, Kaz?
Zone of true smell. Esports. I know there's some kind of Dungeons and Dragons joke in here. Man, what would competitive Dungeons and Dragons look like?
I mean, that's what it originally was, right? Is that every dungeon was a death trap, and whichever group made it the furthest, or like certain actions in the dungeons were worth points. It was a scored game.
Is that right?
I mean, the right. Tomb of Horrors, to just pick one example, was a competitive module.
Now, I know that they drew on, or Gygax originally drew on, like, army figurine games.
Yeah, like wargaming type stuff.
Yeah, so there were war games, and those are competitive.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the time. I remember almost playing Warhammer. I am glad that I did not.
Dodged a pretty expensive bullet there.
Dodged the golden bullet. It shoots directly into your wallet.
It's funny how like people who play Magic, who have played Magic, can joke about how expensive Warhammer is. Meanwhile, like any like normal thinking person is like, wow, Magic's expensive.
Right. Like the and then the Street Fighter character, the Street Fighter player looks at Magic and is like, man, every Magic set is like $400 DLC for the,
yeah,
the competitive character.
It's terrifying. And then me, the person who plays esports on my Super Nintendo, is like, wow, you have to buy a $100 arcade stick and a $200 console for this. It's like, whatever.
And like have a good internet connection.
Yeah.
And
those are expensive. And man, competitive games at varying price points. Yikes. That's its own sort of,
yeah,
tangent. So I think
I'm
the important
street,
thing with
rock, paper,
games,
scissors.
When you go to play competitive games, understand the nature of the kind of competition that's going on.
Right.
And
I think every competitive game community could benefit greatly from taking a step back and understanding themselves as a social structure.
Yes.
Which only very few of them do. Sure, lots of people talk about like the community or whatever, but they're usually talking about, you know, what some named player said to another named player at an event and how it reflects on like our society or whatever. It's like, no,
there's also like local scenes.
Yeah. Right?
And those are their own sort of communities.
Yeah.
That can have their own conventions and norms.
It's all tribes, really.
Yep.
We're back to, I guess humans are just really tribal deep down. If you don't have a tribe, you find one or you make one.
And if you follow their rules, they'll probably let you stay.
Yeah.
Probably even be happy you came if you follow all their rules. So now their tribe's bigger.
Bigger tribe.
Please play Yoshi's Cookie. Please. I'll help you. I'll teach you the
right.
Basics and then the intermediates.
And we also have to get Gnomebitten to start teaching players.
I gotta sit down with him and like take a month and write the actual guide to this game. Be like, here is how we suggest analyzing the game and thinking about it in a way that will help you get extremely good.
And then eventually we will create the our own version of the video game with characters and powers.
Yes, we'll make it more complicated because we can. It might not be better, but just different. But maybe that would be okay if it has functioning netplay.
At the very least, we'll try to get like functioning netplay and like character selection that is not stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, they had four characters in there so that they could use their mascots, you know, who are different.
Yoshi is a menace. Yoshi is the degenerate state, and we just start by removing Yoshi.
Yeah, well,
Yoshi 2016.
Hashtag remove Yoshi 2016. So we have a lot of work ahead of us for sure that we're going to accomplish at no specific point in the future.
No, it'll never happen.
But like,
I
do
definitely die.
Deep down, I do like competitive games as a thing. There's this
exciting.
Gritty thrill to it. Nothing
even
really
games
satisfies.
That I only barely care about, if the competition is good, I'll watch, because there's tension.
Yeah, That's kind of why I cannot watch Marvel. Like, for
one... You
don't
feel the tension?
Well, I have a hard time basically recognizing which person belongs to which team.
Mm.
So I'm like, wait, who's winning? Wait, by how much? Yep. What? Why is the screen constantly exploding with color? What happened to my encode?
And you will not feel the tension. And then it's just this boring light show. You know, so understandability, how well the tension reads is important. And this is something that I'll admit Yoko doesn't do a great job of. You know, you have your two score stacks, and they can be close or they can be far away. And I guess if they're close, then that's a tense situation. And if they're far away, then it's not, because someone is kind of running away with the game. But it's pretty often, I don't know. Actually, well, maybe that makes the tension really easy to read. Either
right, it's like literally displayed on the screen every second.
So I guess with a lot of competitive puzzle games, because it's like, you know, how close are the blocks to the top? You know, are both players close to the top? If so, oh no, who's going to get it? It's exciting, and they keep, you know, counter-bashing back and forth and for 30 seconds, and then one of them slips up, and then you do 1,000 explosions.
Hmm.
They take 10 million damage and lose the game.
Right. What if we had a... What if we had a competitive game that instead of displaying, like, a life bar or a score stack, had a single continuum that both players existed on, and like it started in the middle and there was like a tug of war to it.
Nidhogg works a little like that.
Nidhogg?
Yeah.
Ooh, what kind of game is that?
1v1 sort of simplified platformy type thing where like each of you has a sword and you're trying to run into essentially to one end of the field or the other. And so you'll eventually run into each other. It's difficult, but not impossible to simply avoid the other person and just run past them, at which point the way the game handles that gets a little awkward. But usually what'll happen is they'll get into sword fight, one of them will die, and that gives the other player a few seconds to just run towards their goal before the other player respawns in their way.
Huh. Oh my goodness. I just realized the game I'm talking about is American football.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's a field and a line on it, and it moves, and then you like... So I guess you could see the tension of the game that way, if you know who's going in what direction, which
right.
you do,
well,
because that's
also
the way they're
like,
facing.
What down is it? What's the
right.
current score?
Yeah, there's like a lot of like supporting material for that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's also a clock-based game, which I don't like.
Does
the notion
does carry
of
its own problems.
The notion of ever running out the clock runs so counter to like a balanced game that I can't stand it. Like, yep.
The timer scam.
They're like, oh, there are 3 minutes left and it's now impossible for our opponents to do anything. So we're just gonna walk around the field. Do nothing. The
get
last
right to the
3 minutes
where we
right,
line up and shake each other's hand.
Right. The last 3 minutes of the game being that vastly different from the first three is so awful. I don't like it. I know people. I know I'm not going to convince anyone to like either like or not like American football who doesn't already. So I'm not really like trying to convince. I'm just saying this is
but like you know your fight game has a timer and the possibility of a scam thereof.
Yeah, it's true. But like most fighting games have something built into them that sort of prevents that. Either like you go faster forward than backward, for instance.
Right. Just making it hard to run away for a lengthy
mm-hmm.
period of time.
Yeah.
Often the timer scam involves spending resource.
Yeah.
Because
it's
like well,
it's not free.
You know, I'm there are 5 seconds left and I'm ahead. And if I throw 4 EX fireballs, they will have to just sit there and block all of them. And so I can just spend all my resource to guaranteed kill 5 seconds and win the round.
It's like that's a resource that presumably you generated in a fair way. So
right,
yeah.
You know, even if I take the whole match by doing that, I had to earn that resource in order to use it. So that feels more okay. I bought 5 seconds off the clock with money that glows blue under my character.
Sweet.
There's no timer scam in Yoko.
Well, there's a timer.
Yeah.
Can't really.
There's no scam. There's explosions.
The exchange is fair. I like that it's a fuse. That's pretty good. I guess Hearthstone has a fuse as well.
Hearthstone has a system in place to ensure that the game will very likely eventually end.
And okay, it has a couple, actually.
Yeah.
So after, I think it's after 90 turns that both players explode.
Like it's just a draw after 90 turns?
Yep.
That'd be a heck of a... You'd have to work pretty hard to get to a 90
turn. Yeah, I've only ever encountered that in like a tavern brawl where there was no fatigue.
Right.
Because it kept putting cards in your deck.
One of the draft your deck.
Yeah.
Man, that was kind of fun.
I don't like that one. They'll probably bring it back, so.
I liked it because it was preposterous. I was not playing any recognizable game at all, and I loved it.
Yeah, that's part of it. All right. Anything more we want to talk about? I'm ready to wrap this up.
When you play a competitive game, remember that it, you know, as we've been saying, it's a social thing. Don't be a jerk, no matter what.
First and biggest rule of like
where you are on the fun have try hard continuum is don't be a jerk.
Yeah, there's no room for. Yeah, there's no room anywhere in that continuum for you to be impolite, persecute others. I don't know. Be on your best behavior, huh? Like it's even more important in a competitive game to be polite to people, you know? So
you don't have to be polite in Mega Man. I am
you're there.
Polite in Mega
you were
Man.
You were there to shoot up the robot masters. You do not bow to the robot master before shooting him.
I walk in there with my charged up Mega Buster, and it's like, well, just say when, pal. you move from that spot, and that's like, okay, we fight now. All right, so yeah, that's it. Be decent about it. You can't force a community to grow, but being a jerk is a great way to make sure it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and lacking anything else to say about the matter, we'll finish up as we always do with skulls.